I'm David Berg. President Donald Trump's impeachment trial continues at this hour in the U.S. Senate. Senators have rejected four attempts by Democrats to subpoena documents and people related to the charges against the president. The senators voted along party lines to block motions from Democratic leader Chuck Schumer to subpoena records and documents from the White House, the Office of Management and Budget, and the State Department related to Trump's dealings with Ukraine. It also rejected hearing testimony from Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell suggested grouping all the Democrats' amendments together for one vote, something that Schumer rejected.
But we will not back off on getting votes on all of these amendments, which we regard as extremely significant and important to the country.
The president's legal team has been arguing all day that Trump did nothing wrong and that his actions do not rise to the level needed to remove him from office. President Trump, meanwhile, was at the Davos World Economic Forum on Tuesday, and so was teen climate activist Greta Thunberg. AP's Ed Donahue reports both talked about climate change.
The president didn't mention Thunberg by name. He talked about embracing the possibilities of tomorrow.
We must reject the perennial prophets of doom and their predictions of the apocalypse.
Thunberg, in turn, did not mention the president by name when she said climate change critics consider the topic too depressing.
Unlike you, my generation will not give up without a fight. The facts are clear, but they are still too uncomfortable for you to address.
Thunberg and President Trump have been sparring for months. Last month, the president told her in a tweet to chill and to work on her anger management problem. She jokingly responded, "She is currently chilling." I'm Ed Donahue.
For more, visit voanews.com. This is VOA News. Health officials have confirmed the first U.S. case of a new coronavirus in a traveler returning from a visit to central China. We get more from AP's Jennifer King.
The man, a Washington State resident from Snohomish County, was said to be in satisfactory condition, according to Dr. Jay Cook, the chief medical officer at Providence Regional Medical Center in Everett, Washington.
Out of an abundance of caution, we have the patient being monitored in a special isolation unit.
The official said the new patient had no symptoms when he arrived at Seattle last Wednesday. But knowing about the outbreak, he contacted doctors on Sunday when he'd been ill for about 3 days. The CDC says it's implementing travel restrictions and will begin funneling air passengers coming from China, where the outbreak began, to 5 U.S. airports so the passengers can be properly screened. I'm Jennifer King.
Iran has requested equipment it says it needs from the United States and French authorities in order to download information from black boxes on a Ukrainian passenger plane it shot down earlier this month. Francesca Lina has more.
After taking several days to admit to bringing down the plane in error earlier this month, Iran has been under immense pressure to hand over the black boxes. Canada, 57 of whose citizens were among the 176 people killed in the Ukrainian International Airlines crash, has said France should handle the flight data and voice recorders as one of the few nations with the ability to analyze the information. But Tehran has so far given mixed signals about whether or not they would be given up. Iran is embroiled in a long-running standoff with the United States over its nuclear program that briefly erupted into military strikes this month, starting with the U.S. drone strike, which killed Iranian General Qasem Soleimani, followed by a retaliation attack on U.S. bases in Iraq.
That's Francesca Lina reporting. The U.S. Supreme Court has rejected a request for a fast-track review from defenders of the Obama-era Health Care Act. AP's Jackie Quinn reports.
The nation's highest court has denied a request by 20 states and the House of Representatives that it quickly decide on a lower court ruling that made part of the Affordable Care Act unlawful. The defenders argue that the issues were too important to let the case drag out for months or even years. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans struck down the requirement that Americans obtain health insurance, putting the entire act in question. The denial of a fast-track review makes it highly unlikely the case will be decided before the 2020 presidential election. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
For more on these stories and the rest of the day's news, be sure to visit our website, voanews.com. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. One of Al-Shabaab's most senior foreign fighters has defected.
I defected because Al-Shabaab, they are lying to the Muslims and to the world. They are using the Sharia just to betray the people and fool them and lie to them. But the reality of the action is totally against the Sharia.
Lesotho police have summoned Prime Minister Thomas Thabane for questioning today, Wednesday. East African countries have signed an agreement to harmonize labor migration policies. The Human Rights Defenders Coalition in Tanzania has called for the unconditional release of two rights activists, and Zimbabwe's main opposition leader calls for mass protests.
So we have come here to Stoja, to bury cover, to bury dictatorship, to bury chaos, to bury violence, to bury high unemployment.
That's Nelson Chamisa of the Movement for Democratic Change. And the European Union and the British charity Oxfam have launched an initiative to end sex and gender-based violence. Those stories and Samson O'Malley's special Wednesday sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. One of the most senior foreign fighters with the terrorist group Al-Shabaab says he defected recently from the group and is now in Mogadishu with the Somali government. Zubair Al-Muhajir says he traveled from London to join the group in 2006. He says he rose through the ranks and ultimately became a member of the Al-Shabaab Shura, or the Consultative Council. Zubair Al-Muhajir, who is originally from Ivory Coast, tells the investigative dossier, a VOA Somali program, that he fell out with the group in 2013 when he was arrested and jailed.
I was in the leadership in the Shura Council since the creation of the movement in the beginning. I think it was 2008 or 9, somewhere like that.
When did you leave the organization?
I left the organization in 2013 when they arrested me.
And then what happened? Where did you go?
I was 3 years in prison, and after 3 years, they released me, and they sent me in the north of Somalia. I stayed there for 3 years, and then I decided to defect.
And why did you defect?
I defected because Al-Shabaab, they are lying to the Muslims and to the world. They are claiming to implement the Sharia, which is not true, because I know some incidences where they went against the Sharia. They are using the Sharia just to betray the people and fool them and lie to them. But the reality of the action is totally against the Sharia. They are killing innocent people and they are lying to the people.
When did you take the final decision, and what was the single incident that drove you out?
The incident that pushed me to leave was I had an argument with them about paying of zakah and taxes. I showed them that if they want to take taxes from me, I'm ready to give them the taxes, but if they want zakah from me, I'm not among the people who pay the zakah, you understand?
Tell me exactly what do you want the international community and the Somalis to know about Al-Shabaab?
First of all, I want the Muslims to know the reality of Al-Shabaab. The claims that they are implementing the Sharia, this is just lies. And to the world, what I want to say, especially to the Somali government, I want to tell them that they have to take the issue of Shabaab seriously. Otherwise, they will still kill the innocent people and put it on the name of the Sharia, you understand? So we have to take the fight with Al-Shabaab on the ideology side, because this is the side which is boosting Al-Shabaab. If the people realize that the ideology is wrong with Islamic proofs, I think Al-Shabaab, they will no longer be there for a long time.
That is the question I wanted to ask you, which is, why is it difficult to defeat Al-Shabaab?
The reason is difficult because Al-Shabaab, their fight is based on religion. This is a religious fight. It's not a political fight. But the problem is, they have a wrong understanding of the religion.
What's your plan now?
My plan now is to carry on to speak against Al-Shabaab. And I wish the Muslim can help me for that. If they don't, I'm going to carry on by myself, because this is a religious duty for me.
Zubair Al-Muhajir is a former Al-Shabaab foreign fighter and now a defector. You're speaking with reporter Haroon Maruf of VOA's Somali service. Zimbabwe's main opposition leader, Nelson Chamisa, says Tuesday that his movement for Democratic Change Party will hold mass demonstrations to force the government to address the country's political and economic problems. He also appealed to the international community to ease a deepening humanitarian crisis in Zimbabwe. Columbus Mavunga reports from the capital, Harare.
After Zimbabwe's main opposition party threatened a lawsuit, the police gave in and lifted a ban on this rally Tuesday in Mbare, one of Harare's poorest townships. At the rally, MDC leader Nelson Chamisa said his party would hold mass demonstrations to force President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to address the country's mounting problems.
So we have come here to Stoda, to bury poverty, to bury dictatorship, to bury chaos, to bury violence, to bury mashurugwi, to bury high unemployment, to bury all the problems you are facing, in particular to bury absence of electricity and water in your homes. This is our last place to see these things. These things you are seeing, you will see no more.
At the same rally, Chamisa said he was worried by the worsening humanitarian crisis in Zimbabwe.
International partners, please help us. Hear our voice where we are crying for you to help us. Forget about our problems in the country. Help us on the humanitarian front.
Monica Mchangwa, Zimbabwe's information minister, said she would comment only after hearing the opposition leader's address on national television late Tuesday. Chamisa said the law allows the MDC to hold rallies when it considers it necessary, and said 2020 will be a year of demonstrations and action. However, it remains to be seen whether authorities will agree and let the rallies take place. Officials in the current government and the previous one under Robert Mugabe often refused permission for opposition events and used force to break up ones that took place. According to the United Nations, Zimbabwe is probably facing its worst humanitarian crisis, with more than 5.5 million people in need of food aid because of recurring droughts and the moribund economy. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Lesotho police have summoned Prime Minister Thomas Thabane for questioning over his alleged connection to the murder of his estranged wife in 2017. According to local media reports, the Prime Minister will go to the police today, Wednesday, to assist with the investigation. Lepolelo Thabane, the Prime Minister's estranged wife, was shot dead while driving with a friend days before her husband took office in 2017. Thabane has since said he will step down, although he has given no specific date to do so. Principal Chief Kobani Teko, who is also the chief whip of the Lesotho Senate, says the resignation of the Prime Minister could set off a constitutional crisis in the Southern African Kingdom.
It is not very certain whether he'll truly turn up to answer issues that the police have already written him a letter to answer some few questions about the death of his estranged wife, who died in 2017. We know that the Prime Minister incumbent is not excluded from being called by the police. But I thought we also see it as sometimes as new justice or disjustice to him to be called to come to the police station while they can interview him and interrogate him at his own place of residence. Well, according to protocol, which maybe the police do not have, but I'm doubting it, because in the past we have seen his wife run away, the wife that he's living with him. We are not sure until he reaches the police station that he'll really do that job and turn up to the police station.
You are one of the very few people who initially called on the Prime Minister to step down. Several people, including opposition and a faction within the ABC itself, has called on him to step down. He said he will step down but did not give specific date. Do you feel vindicated by that?
Yeah, in a way, I feel so, but I wish he could state the date of his stepping down. But, you know, if he resigns, that's another
sort of a constitutional problem. Because if he resigns without naming a successor, it means that he has to go for election. Lesotho is exhausted with the election. That really does not help the livelihoods of the people.
Doesn't the constitution provide for somebody to hold the fort until elections are due?
Yeah, but that will be a very long time because the elections are expected to be in 2022. So that person, whether it is the deputy prime minister or any other person who is the member of the coalition but not member of the party that reigns with a lot of more, like more seats in parliament.
What are your views about how the police have comported themselves in this investigation?
For me, they've been very brave to make that decision of investigating the first lady who has taken a run, and also to call the prime minister. It has never happened before.
Kobani Tiko is the chief whip in the Lesotho Senate. You're speaking to a viewer's Peter Clotty. Today is Wednesday, January 22nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. East African states and the other countries in the Horn of Africa have signed an agreement to harmonize labor migration policies in Africa. The agreement was reached at a two-day summit, which ended yesterday, Tuesday, in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. According to the regional director of the International Organization for Migration, Mohamed Abdik Kadir, the countries endorse some coordinated approaches that will lead to the protection of migrant workers. Maureen Odhiambo reports from Nairobi.
The summit that brought together more than 10 member states aims at expanding the scope of bilateral labor migration agreements for other professions, skills level beyond the current ones, which mostly concern domestic workers. Speaking in Nairobi yesterday, Tuesday, the regional director, International Organization for Migrants, as well as the United Nations, Mohamed Abdikadir, said that the member states will put more efforts in ensuring free movement of persons working across Africa is achieved.
We need to intensify efforts for more countries to ratify the African Union Free Movement Protocol and intensify work within the regional economic communities, particularly relevant to migration, free movement of persons, workers' rights of residents, and establishment, trade and services, recognition of degrees, qualifications, education and training skills, migration of entrepreneurs, seasonal employment and transit and others.
Domestic workers, especially those from Horn of Africa seeking employment in neighboring countries, have had their rights violated. Mr. Abdikadir says the move will help member states implement the return of its migrants across the world.
We also need to set or improve the functioning of implementation, monitoring and evaluation committees for our bilateral labor migration agreements. And finally, develop and implement return and reintegration programs to support our returning migrants from various parts of the world.
On the other hand, Kenya's Labor and Social Protection Cabinet Secretary Simon Chelgui said that a united approach in protecting migrant workers across Africa is key in finding solutions to challenges facing its people.
We are going to seek ways of better protecting the migrant workers as East Africa and Horn of Africa face the same challenges as one. We will rise and fall as one people.
According to the World Economic Forum, the most striking aspect about international migrants in Africa is that most of them move within the region. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Odhiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition is calling for the immediate and unconditional release of human rights activist Tito Elia Mangoti and his co-accused Theodori Gyani. The government charged both men with leading an organized crime ring. Onesmo Olingurumoa, the national coordinator for the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition, says his organization supports calls by Amnesty International for the immediate and unrestricted release of the two activists.
Yes, of course, we were in line and also support the Chief Justice's statement that issued last year, lamenting on the delays of cases that involve people who have been arrested without a proper investigation. Because we believe before you arrest someone, you might have gone to the level of at least 50% sure of what you are going to do as far as the arrest and prosecutions are concerned. But the main challenge is that most of the cases of people that involve economic and money laundering cases are still in court 1 or 3 or 4 years at some time. So our call is that let them speed up or fast track investigation, or the Director of Public Prosecution have other authorities able to release them pending investigation.
The government is charging Tito and Theodore for leading an organized crime, possession of a computer program designed for the purpose of committing an offense. These are grievous charges that are unbailable. What do you say to that?
Yeah, of course. These are economic and money laundering offenses are currently unbailable. But our concern is that the provisions that curtail the right to bail are unconstitutional. We have even two cases in court challenging the requirement to use the computer proceeding, and the other one challenging the denying the restriction of bail on such kind of offenses. Actually, our call is that let the court have power to decide who should be given bail or who should be denied bail.
Amnesty International is calling for the immediate and unconditional release of Tito Theodore. Now, some people are saying that more international pressure should be brought on the government in order to stop these acts of what they call persecution of those who are opposed to the government. What is your organization's stance on this call?
We are always in support of international solidarity when it comes to issues of human rights violations, because human rights are universal. And whatever that is happening in Tanzania can have impact in neighboring countries, can have impact to the global societies, because this has been the long-time practice, and it has been sometimes producing good results where government officials have been have started negotiations to various international forums to address some of the issues that have been raised jointly by local and international organizations.
Onismo Olingurumuan is the national coordinator for the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. The group, the European Union, and the British charity Oxfam have launched a project intended to encourage men and boys to serve as lead campaigners to end sex and gender-based violence, SGBV, in Liberia, Ghana, and Mali. Moses Gazier will report from Monrovia, Liberia.
The European Union and Oxfam say they will work with and provide grants to aid women's rights organizations for the next 2 years to strengthen them in influencing policies and services aimed at preventing SGBV and related issues. The project will also help community organizations working to challenge and change discriminatory social and gender norms, attitudes and practices to prevent violence against women and girls. European Union Head of Cooperation in Liberia, Theodorios Kasper, says the new approach, which includes men and boys, is a vital catalyst for a successful fight against SGBV-related issues.
There are many inspiring male role models, and we need more of those vocal and motivating role models in the society. Being a strong man and a strong believer and a supporter of gender equality, I'm myself particularly looking forward to seeing more of those inspiring male role models within the course of this project and beyond.
There have been dozens of projects in previous years to curb sexual and gender-based violence, including rape. Despite those efforts, such cases remain prevalent. However, officials say the Enough Project initiative will add impetus to solve the problems. Charlinton is the Liberia Country Director for Oxfam.
Looking at the share of the resources, 1.5 million, 65% is going to the local organization who will actually implement activities at the ground level.
Foundation for Community Initiative Executive Director Loretta Popcar said the project will put a key emphasis on changing the perception of violators.
We are focused on negative social norms that perpetrate violence against women and girls. And I think this time around we're going to make the difference, because we are working with the perpetrators, the men and boys, to take positive actions in any gender-based violence in Liberia, Ghana and Mali.
Last August, Liberia took a giant step towards ending domestic violence by passing its first domestic violence law. Representative Ellen Arthur Reid, a member of the Women's Legislative Caucus at the Liberian Legislature, wants more action if the project is to work.
We have to say enough is enough, and we have to demonstrate
that indeed enough is enough.
Sexual and gender-based violence offenses in Liberia are among the highest, with little adjudication in the courts. In 2018, over 2,000 SJBV cases were reported, with only 17% of the cases prosecuted. The Enough Project, which is a new initiative of turning men and boys into key participants, will change the narrative to ending violence against women and girls. Moses Gazil, VOA News, Monrovia.
This time now for a special Wednesday edition of Daybreak Africa. Sporting, here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Wednesday morning to you, Samson.
Good Wednesday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with a look at the draws for the group phase of the FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022, which took place on Tuesday in Cairo, Egypt, with 40 African countries discovering their fates for the second round of the qualifying campaign. The teams representing 40 countries across the CAF region were divided into 10 groups of 4 teams each for the penultimate stage of the continental journey to Qatar. In Group A, it will be Algeria, Burkina Faso, Niger and Djibouti slogging it out. The contest in Group B will involve Tunisia, Zambia, Mauritania and Equatorial Guinea, while Group C will have the likes of Nigeria, Cape Verde, Central African Republic and Liberia. Sports journalist Noah Drewer reflects on the chances of these teams.
It's obviously Nigeria's already said that, look, it's a must for the Super Eagles of Nigeria to qualify from Group C. Now, Cape Verde are spoilers and we need to prepare very well.
Moving up to Group D, where Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire, Mozambique, Malawi will square it out, while Group E will have the likes of Mali, Uganda, Kenya and Rwanda. Group F will see Egypt, Gabon, Libya and Angola battling it out, while Group G have Ghana, South Africa, Zimbabwe and Ethiopia squaring it out. Football analyst Chika Udemkwa describes Group G as a group of death.
One would expect Ghana to indeed come tops given the array of talent, but given the resurgence of South Africa, that perhaps could be another factor. Zimbabwe of late has shown promise, and that could be where my interest will be.
Senegal, Congo, Namibia and Togo are in Group H, while Morocco, Guinea, Guinea-Bissau and Sudan constitute Group I. Group J have DR Congo, Benin, Madagascar and Tanzania. Preeti Adeguke, a sports reporter and presenter, tells me that there are no longer minnows in African football.
There's no pushover again in African football because everybody is living up to expectations. Some of the teams hitherto seen in the past as little teams, small teams, pushovers, are not like that anymore because there are no minnows in world football, especially in Africa. If you can see teams like Tanzania, Madagascar, Zimbabwe, Malawi coming up strongly, then there is no team that cannot upset another in these groups.
The group phase of the qualifiers start in October 2020, continuing until October 2021. After a round-robin of matches, the winners of the 10 groups will qualify to the final round of the continental qualification on the journey to Qatar. The final round will see the 10 teams drawn into 5 home and away ties, with the 5 winners securing the ticket to represent Africa on the tournament scheduled for 21st of November to the 18th of December 2022 in Qatar. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sport. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Wednesday, January 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you a very good Wednesday.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.